I want to start with why I do this work, where this came from. That would be great if you could turn your cell phones off. That would be rad. Unless you're expecting an important call, of course. Where this work began, I was at an astrology conference, and I heard an astrologer named Jeff Green answer. Somebody asked a question from the audience. Oh, what about the asteroid Lucifer that you work with? And I had an intuitive hit. This was 3.5 years ago. To go home and look it up in my chart, and I started to use it in my chart, use it in my life, and use it with other people. And I really started to see that it answered some big questions. So when I started the work, I said, "This is all about existential problems. Why am I here? Is there a God? If there is a God, why should I? You know, should I serve? Why should I serve? You know, all those kinds of questions." And over time, it's evolved quite a bit, and you're hearing tonight the first public presentation of basically 3.5 years worth of work on this archetype, uncovering things and getting to the bottom of it to make it useful to help to support people in healing. I work with a bunch of different myths, and I have this approach I call living myth, where I look at archetypal process. So we have the myth, and then we also have the archetype, and they actually differ. And so I look at how people actually live the stories to see how, to help them see where the mythological figure in question can learn something new or make a different choice than in the story, because most of our myths turn out tragically. And we're living those stories every day. So why not learn something new and change how it works? Because the outcomes aren't set in stone. We don't need, you know, to end up with this tragic situation. Just a note on context, I work with three archetypes. I focus on three. The first one is Lilith, the second one is Lucifer, and the third one is Arjun Suri, which is based on the protagonist of the Bhagavad Gita. Lilith is about reconnecting to instinct, at least how I use it, the primal wild inside you. Lucifer is about Lucifer is about reconnecting an appropriate relationship with your voice of doubt, which is your own reason faculties, to trust your mind again. And then Arjun Suri is about the relationship to conscience. So you can sign up for my mailing list if you want to see how that big thing develops over the next few years. So like I said, I differentiate between myth and archetype. Myths are always tools for social instruction. Always. Archetypes are how people actually live. You don't live myths, you live archetypes. If you're living the myth, then you are accepting some instruction on how you're supposed to be. People who are studying astrology who might find out about, let's say, even the four main asteroids, like Ceres, Juno, Vesta, and Pallas, they might even start to, as an example, they might even start to identify with those four stories, but what's really behind those stories, the archetype, is what they think they're living. And then they sometimes try to overwrite what their actual experience is because they've been told this is what the story is about and this is what it is. My main example out of those four is with Juno, who is the wife of Jupiter, and she's said to be his angry wife. And so people who think they're living Juno stories, male or female, they don't have to end up that way, but they tend to because they tend to end up with this anger and this resentment for not being met with an equal level of commitment, which is the core of the archetype, committing fully to something. It's not really about literal marriage. And it doesn't have to turn out that way because the truth of it is you just have to be clear about to what or whom you're committing. And they have to be clear about your level of commitment. If they say, oh my God, no, you know ahead of time. You don't have to worry about it later. So how the myth is always social instruction. You're supposed to have certain behaviors and attitudes and beliefs, and you're supposed to avoid other ones. And then the archetype is when you're going home, you're driving home, and you're thinking, what about what happened to you today? And the kind of meat of the story where you're probably not outside of it, but you're really in it. So that's my note on that. That's my prefatory note for every talk I give, basically. I also write a monthly column called Living Myth, and every month I explore this in some archetype. And right now I'm in a series of, I think it's going to be 4 or 5 on Lilith. And from my website, there's a link to that. So, and also, as I'm going, feel free to raise your hand and ask questions. Okay. So, when I talk about Lucifer, I have to offer a definition of evil that a lot of people haven't heard. Basically, evil is the energy of separating from what you know is good. That's evil. That's it. Each of us has an internal goodness barometer. We know what's right. We know what's good. And it can be from something we learned or something we didn't learn from some kind of group, religious conditioning, social conditioning, something like that. But basically, inside each of you, you know what's right. If you move towards that, if you live from within that, then you are doing good. If you're not, you're doing evil. That's all evil is. Everybody's ideas and language about it will differ, but you know what's right inside you. So then each of us has choice all the time. We're either always separating or we're always returning to what that is. So some people will say it's God, and that's cool. Some people will substitute another word for that and say spirit and good or goddess or whatever. But another way of looking at that is just what is right. It doesn't have to be God. So the title of the talk, For the Love of God, it's because I'm using Lucifer's story from the scriptures, from the mythology. And so that's the thing he is trying to serve. It doesn't really matter if you believe in God or not. There's something outside of yourself that you wish to serve. That's kind of Lucifer deal. Yes, with a simple circuit, you're either separating or returning. You're either going away from what you know is good or you're coming back to it. How to know how to behave? How does what you do make you feel? And is your heart opening or closing as a result of your choices? That's how we can know, am I separating or returning? How do you feel in your body? How does your heart feel? Do you feel uplifted or do you feel heavy and burdened by what you're doing? The externalization and personification of a devil is a red herring, a distraction to keep you from wholeness. I was joking before everybody got here about, are you ready to hear about the devil? Because the title of the talk is Lucifer. But that never gets anybody anywhere. It's a tool of social instruction. It's a don't do this, don't live this story, don't understand this part of yourself. Essentially, don't ask questions. We'll get there in a minute. Okay. I start with the Hebrew mythology. It's a lot different from the Christian mythology. In Genesis, most of this isn't in there. A lot of what I'm drawing from are commentaries on Genesis from later rabbinical people, rabbis who are writing and called the Midrashic texts, which are inspired commentaries on the scriptures. They're the foundations for Judeo-Christian thought. So that's why I start there, and then I'm going to talk about how it gets translated when the shift goes to Christianity, because it's very, very different. So the first thing I have under the Hebrew mythos is all about Adam. Adam from Genesis is the model of masculinity that we're supposed to have. Every man is supposed to be like Adam in our culture. And actually, you could argue, or I could argue, or we could argue, in every culture that's shaped by monotheistic religions, because that's coming from this Judeo-Christian foundation, all Adam has to do is listen to God, listen to what God says, and he will be rewarded with power, prestige, property, everything. If he just listens to God. The one of the keys about this is that he's not expected to take responsibility for anything he does. All he has to do is listen to God. And if God tells him to do it, it's okay for him to do. Right? This is just kind of what I'm culling from all of this. The big example of that is eating the apple. Later, after Eve is created from a part of him as a derivative, a figure. And she, well, it's said different places, or different ways in different places. But the basic idea is she says, hey, take a bite of the apple. And he sits there with it, and he weighs it in his hand for hours, and he's thinking about it. And then he does it, and then it's her fault. So it's over and over again, everything about Adam, it's not that he doesn't take responsibility. That archetype is about not taking responsibility for your actions. One of the ways that manifests is in the way that we treat the planet, the state of our environment. We're not responsible because we've been told that it's okay for us to use everything here. And we're not responsible for all the destruction that's happened. So you can kind of see where this work can lead. As far as changing people's level of taking responsibility for their actions, there are tons of us that do take responsibility for our actions. But as a collective, we're not yet doing it. And it has to happen via individuals shifting, and that's what this work is about. On the sixth day, back to Genesis, God creates Adam, and according to Genesis, God's really happy and proud of this creation. This is the best creation ever. And God gathers all the angels together and says, I want you to honor this fabulous creation and bow down to him. The archangel Michael does it. God told him to do it. He did it. And Samael is actually the Hebrew archangel that's equivalent of Lucifer. So for a few minutes, I'm going to be talking about Samael and just kind of translate that into Lucifer. Maybe I'll say Samael Lucifer. Maybe that'll work. Samael says, wait a minute. You told us that we were created from your divine essence and that we reflect that and that we carry that around with us and that we are your divine essence. So if you want us to bow down before being made of dust, that's something not right about that. And God says, well, I'm telling you to do it. And he says, I really don't think that you maybe don't see the illogic. Like, I'm only basing this on what you've told us is true. So he's challenging the logic that God's using. And God says, you know what? This is what you have to do. This is your job. And he says, no, and he leaves. He ends up leaving. And there's a third of the angels, a third of the angelic host that happens to support him. And so he leaves, and they go with him. And this is the fall. This is the falling out of heaven. Or in the Hebrew version, we're not talking about heaven in the same way. But leaving God's presence. When I started to get into these texts, the Midrashic texts, but then the commentaries on them, all kinds of stuff is being said to either try to make this make sense or justify it or something. And if you're interested in getting into that, I want to recommend a book called Hebrew Myths by Graves and Bataille. Robert Graves, you might be familiar with him if you're into almost any kind of mythology. And then Raphael Bataille, R-A-P-H-A-E-L. P-A-T-A-I, Patai. And he's done a lot of work on Semitic mythologies, so Arab and Jewish mythologies, Hebrew mythologies. And then Graves, of course. So they put their skills together and kind of did this, and it's an absolutely amazing book.
Sorry, what's it called?
It's called Hebrew Myths. Yeah. Maybe it's called The Hebrew Myths, but yeah. Yeah, so the core of the story is he says, I can't do that because that transgresses your own logic and what you told us. Later, it gets turned into, actively working against God, and that's evil. And so that's how Lucifer gets kind of blown out of proportion into this cartoony antagonist. But the original idea is, Samael says, I can't. He's actually a lesser being according to what you've told us and how you've created everything. So he takes off, he leaves. He's hoping to keep God honest. And this kind of rebellion by the best and brightest archangel is absolutely unheard of. I mean, we're only 6 days into creation, but this whole kind of thing is absolutely unheard of. But this is the, you know, he thinks that this level of transgression of the logic is absolutely, you absolutely can't get around it. And everybody else might be able to say, well, you know, or two-thirds of the angels might be able to say, yeah, well, you know, this is what the big guy told us to do. But he says, no, it's just not right. If he stays, it would mean accepting what he sees as a misstep of God over what he knows is right. In the Hebrew tradition, Samael is not vilified quite as much, but he is demonic. And then before we get to the part on Christianity and how Samael becomes rather magnificently Lucifer and becomes, you know, totally blown out of proportion, I work with something I call the quartet. And it's Adam and Eve as the acceptable masculine and feminine, and then Lilith and Lucifer as the rejected feminine and masculine, respectively. So I work with them together. Last month here I did a talk on Lilith, and I recorded that. And basically the same kind of talk as tonight, but on Lilith, on the instinctive wild. And I'm selling that via my site if you're interested. You can hear some samples on my website. But so I work with them as a quartet, because every man or every woman knows that she's Lilith, but she's told she's supposed to be Eve. Every man knows he's Lucifer or Samael, but he's told he's supposed to be Adam. So we're walking around with internal, if we're paying attention to ourselves and we have been well trained and we've listened to what we were told, most of us, or to what most of us have been told, we are walking around with some inner conflict about who we really are, some self-acceptance issues, because it's totally unacceptable to be Lilith and Lucifer, and yet everybody is carrying these energies. So that's my note on the quartet for a little context. When we get to Christianity, in the Hebrew tradition, Lilith is the big demon. She is responsible for many, many horrible, horrible things. And the Hebrews by not getting rid of her, by keeping her in the tradition, they have to constantly berate her. They have to constantly demonize her. And the shift to Christianity, so in a way this talk goes with the Lilith talk, in a certain way they go together. But when we get this shift into Christianity, Lilith is forgotten. So that I work with a lot of people who grew up in Christian households, and they say, why have I never heard of Lilith? Because I know the story in my bones. Why have I never heard the story? And I say, because she fell out of the mythology. She's only in the Hebrew versions. And she's not even in that many text places, but she is constantly kept in mind as a negative influence. So the focus of what you have to keep down goes from the rejected feminine of Lilith to the rejected masculine of this fallen angel, this doubter, this dissenter. So Lucifer is constantly said to be constantly working against God, that he's actively evil. These religions rely on you not trusting your own voice and your own inner knowledge. With Lilith, it's the connection to instinct. With Lucifer, it's the connection to your own mind and trusting your own logic and reasoning and trusting your own mind, basically. So then you have all these stereotypes. Oh, so this is the major Piscean Age religions are what can't survive if you trust your own mind. So if they sprung up in the last few thousand years, they can't afford to have you know yourself. So they have to demonize aspects of it, and so that we all carry around shadows. Lucifer is a giant shadow. So all these stereotypes generated, the boogeyman, the devil sitting on your shoulder, evil, and look in contemporary culture, all of the horror movies, if they have a protagonist who is evil, this is what we're talking about. So this is constantly repeated and regurgitated in front of all of us all the time. This demonizing basically the person who doesn't do what everybody else does. That's the basic core of the Lucifer story. And then when you give him an axe and put a mask on him and put him in a movie, it's different. But the core of it is somebody who's rebelling. So this idea, I called the talk For the Love of God, and I did this because everything that Lucifer does is for and from his devotion to serving God. In our lives, it's the thing that we know that's bigger than us. We just have that natural need because we understand that we are, you know, one being, you know, apparently separated from the everything, and there is an everything. And each of us, I argue, would love to serve the greater thing. Natural human inclination gives us meaning for being here. If I'm just me and I don't serve the greater thing, and maybe there is no, this is the thing with the existentialists, who got them all into these cycles of troubles in their mind and these giant tomes that don't help anybody. And they're really trying to work out this problem and it never worked because they went with the Lucifer route, which was all mental. So this service to the greater thing. What's obvious is there is service. What's not obvious is that doubt and dissent actually can be service. And I have one note on rebellion, Lucifer versus Uranus. And somewhere in there, there's something about rebels with and rebels without causes. Because Uranian energy wants to break out of the structures, there may not be more cause than down with them or down with that structure. But with Lucifer, there's always a reason. There's always a cause. The reasons we don't serve, I say, oh, everybody wants to serve the greater thing, and some of you might be saying, well, that's just ridiculous. When we don't want to serve the greater thing, we are full of emotional debris from our experiences of feeling that our service is rejected or being hurt by whatever. Because Lucifer is actually, Samael Lucifer is actually about an emotional thing, even though everything with him is about the mind, but it's to overcompensate for a pain of feeling betrayed by God, because he believes in this, he believes in the agenda, and then God starts working against his own agenda, and Lucifer is so dedicated to it that he has to leave, and that hurts. Yeah, that hurts. The thing you respect starts messing around and messing up intentionally and changing the rules and doing really stupid stuff, and leaving can hurt. I'm just going to kind of run through stages of the archetype as we live the story, and I'm going to say a couple of things about a couple of them, but I'm not going to spend a ton of time doing it. The first thing is you're serving. You want to serve the bigger thing. You're doing it. The next thing is you're noting some flaw in the leader's logic that involves or that affects everyone, and it seems to maybe challenge the integrity of the whole system. Third one, you bring the objection to the leader. The fourth one, the leader has heard you and you have to argue. The fifth one, they're not going to listen. It's not your opinion isn't going to be taken into account, so you have to leave, and that's about integrity. So you've gone, the sixth one, and then you're separate. You know, what we do in this stage is the most important thing because it sets the experience for the entire story. Do we choose to heal the feeling of betrayal of ourselves and everything by the leader, or do we choose to allow ourselves to become embittered because we were hurt? Anybody who's living a Lucifer story, who's ever even halfway derailed him or herself, has been in this stage and made the choice to become embittered. Ultimately, there's returning, because we left because of our devotion for service, and we can remain in service as we're separate. A major confusion about what the separation from this prevailing agenda is. He leaves because he's devoted. His departure is because he has respect for the original agenda and how everything was. Sometimes, to have integrity, you have to stay out. And leaving is not necessarily an abandonment of your commitment to serve. And when you return, it's not always to the bosom of the leader. So there's a lot of gray area in that, in the returning. The way that we tell Lucifer's story, not Samael's, not the Hebrew version, but the Christian story, is that he will return. He will come back to God. He will get over his problem, and he will come back. And that's misunderstanding that he left because of the devotion. So he never really left. He just had to leave the presence because he had to make that statement, I can't support what you're doing. Any questions or comments on anything so far? Because I'm just barreling through this.
Comment. Yeah. Lucifer is actually closer to God, meaning the good, meaning the instinct or the thing that you're standing for, mm-hmm. or the thing that you feel you need to do, the right thing to do. So that's mm-hmm. an interesting way to find God. He's actually closer to good.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Thank you. In a sense, yes, definitely. Definitely. Because everyone else is like, oh, yeah, okay, God told me to do it. Yeah. Yeah. The only one with a conscience. Well, so to contrast him with Adam, who is expected not to take responsibility for himself, that's what Lucifer does. He takes responsibility for himself. Yeah. We, as we live Lucifer's story, can ignore our conscience. But, yeah. The way that I tell the story as a kind of, I don't want to do it idealized, but the archetypal approach of, you know, yeah, it's idealized. It's definitely idealized. I'm putting it up there and then saying we live in variants of it. But yeah.
And why then God could be the bigger man, so to speak, and say, oh, well, yeah, okay, you were right. Why does that not mm-hmm. happen? And why was Lucifer the bad guy?
These Piscean Age religions need you to listen.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You can't deviate from the received agenda.
So it's the religion.
The big question here is, whose God is this? Mm-hmm. What God is this? It's Yahweh. Yahweh is not the energy that put everything into motion.
The creator.
And, yeah. That's not who Yahweh is. Mm-hmm. So you can do some research on who Yahweh really is. Yeah. This is good because whose God is this? Who is this? What agenda is this? You know what I mean? And yeah. But the Judeo-Christian deal is, that is the creator. So that voice must be the final authority at all costs. And when you read about what's really happening with Yahweh and what he's really up to and who he really is and where he's really from and what's really going on, that'll make sense.
Is that
I'm not going to go into it, but it's amazing.
Well, because I've heard too that something makes sense. That
yeah.
There is the creator and then there's the God of this earth, which is, you know, what do people follow? Which is generally money or greed or lust or whatever.
I see.
Combination of that. And then the creator is the essence, the source.
Right. Well, there's this deal with Yahweh being involved in manipulating human DNA.
Oh.
I know. I wasn't going to talk about it because okay. Manipulating human DNA in order to help humanity develop in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. So, and from that standpoint, there's a creator God aspect to Yahweh. So, but then, right, I think you and I seem to agree on the idea of a creator, which is vast and different.
Yeah.
But I think when you just say creator God, that's where some of this thinking is going.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to Google that?
Oh, yeah. Look up Zechariah Sitchin.
Okay.
Last name is Sitchin. And over here at the Bodhi Tree, they have every book he's ever written.
Okay.
Okay. Why bother? Why bother doing this work? You know, why bother thinking about Lucifer? Why bother? There are, you know, my work as a counseling astrologer, as an intuitive counselor, as a psychic medium, This is all about assisting and supporting people in getting back to wholeness. So whatever needs to be healed or released or resolved is what I'm all about. So why bother with Lucifer? Many, many, many of us are overdoing Lucifer, which is a mental mode. Relying on the world of the mind as a survival strategy because of some kind of sense of betrayal, some kind of thing. When we overdo the mind, it is always a response to emotional pain. It's not natural to just be in the mind. It's just not. The brain develops protection plays, is how I've written it here. And being in the mind exclusively is being disconnected from our real natures, from who we really are, our wholeness. So why bother? You know, you're not going to be happy if you're not whole. You're not going to be fulfilled. You're not going to enjoy being on Earth if you're not having as much access to as many parts of yourself, when appropriate, as possible. So this is in reconnecting yourself to the bigger thing and supporting you in figuring out what your Luciferian service is. So the negative Lucifer is this overdoing the world of the mental, the reliance on the logic to keep the focus, the attention, and energy away from the heart. The ideal Lucifer is when the voice of doubt, because that's how it manifests in us, we'll explore it in a minute, the voice of doubt, allowing that to be a check on our motivations. Instead of the captain of the ship, allowing it to be the close advisor of the captain who says, wait a minute, are you really sure that you want to steer around that reef? Because I heard that there's big thing over there and you don't want to go over there. So this kind of voice of doubt that's always possible to have working for us to support us instead of getting us to not do anything because it's full of doubt. The big question is the mind working in service of the heart? And when I say the heart, I look at the heart as the connector of all parts of us. When we're in our heart, we can be connected to all parts of ourselves. Physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. That's the bridge. That's the center. Fourth chakra, heart. Yeah, so is the mind working in the service of the heart? If it is, the voice of doubt can be a constant companion that serves us as we serve. And if it's not, it's the voice of our own personal inquisitor, our own personal Torquemada. Always, constantly. You don't do this. You don't want this. Why are you doing this? Who do you think you are? What are you? You can't do that. You know, that kind of constant, like, it eats people up. So now is when we get to the beginning of the astrology stuff. Astrologically, where Lucifer, which is asteroid 1930, where it shows up in your chart, it's where the voice of doubt manifests in your life.
1930.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, it is.
What is Lucifer 1930 again?
Oh, the asteroid number.
It's an asteroid,
yeah. And there's a list of asteroids, named asteroids, that might be 10,000 named asteroids in other bodies, might be 10,000 long. And, you know, people name them when they get discovered, and then astrologers rush in and assign the archetypes according to how they've been named by astronomers. Very synchronistic. So,
this is named by astronomers.
Yeah, astrologers do not name bodies.
Oh, it was named 1930, asteroid 1930.
It was the 1930th body on the list discovered, so we got that number.
But astronomers named it Lucifer?
And when you look at this, here, and get this. This is like, I'm just having my mind blown for a minute because I'm just realizing something about the synchronicity of the naming that I can't think about now because I'm giving you a presentation. But,
the stock market?
Huh?
The stock
market? No, about the synchronicity of how these things are named, and then astrologers rush in with the archetype ready to go, and I'll work on it later. Earth, right? Mars, and these are their orbits right around the Sun. And then you have this giant Jupiter, its orbit. Here you have all these asteroids. This is an asteroid belt. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of asteroids. And that's where Lucifer is, that's where the asteroid Lilith is, that's where all these asteroids are. when you get into like centaurs, it's different. When you get into like trans-Neptunian objects, it's different. But asteroids, that's the asteroid belt. So it's really weird that so one of the big theories, just as an absolute aside, is that there was a planet there that got destroyed.
A what?
A planet, because of the yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so just the math on all of that, that there should be a planet there. So, anyway. Wow, okay. So that's where it is. It's an asteroid, and it's just numbered 1930. That's how astrologers can book it up in a chart. That's the short answer, the long answer. Okay, so where it is in the chart is where this voice of doubt manifests. We will keep ourselves from serving for fear of being perceived or being prideful, arrogant, selfish, etc. When Lucifer says, I can't do this, I'm out of here, he gets the label prideful, right? And what is one of the worst things in the Judeo-Christian ethic? It's to be arrogant, pride, selfish, yeah. So that's the label he carries. So we, as we live this archetype of figuring out how to serve the bigger thing, we're going to live little stories, little modules of it, which are the myth, which are people saying, if you doubt and dissent and leave, you're arrogant. If you stand up and take pride in what you're up to, you are selfish, right? So that's what people are processing. That's what people have absorbed. So as it shows up in a chart, it's where the voice of doubt manifests. It's what you doubt that you should develop in yourself as qualities. Because if you do, you will be arrogant. Because you've been told that being Lucifer is bad. This is when it gets good, right? This is when it's getting good. And yet not...
Huh? You want to play the devil now.
Yeah, you should. You definitely should. Halloween's right around the corner. Everybody can be the devil.
Or Lilith.
Yeah, you can be Lilith, sure. I don't know if I'm going to be Lilith this year. I don't know.
We have to know a little bit more about it.
Oh, that's the talk I gave in early August.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you never develop this part of yourself, where it is, and we'll go into it with the example charts that I'll hand out in a minute. If you never do it, then this part of you is just anemic and underserved and constantly doing the doubt thing. You are, all the negative doubt stuff. You shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't do this. If we can keep ourselves from the excess of prideful things, pridefulness, because I don't say it's a great thing, but when you stand up and dissent, you're labeled as prideful, and that's not right, that doesn't work, it's not accurate, we certainly can go too far with this energy. We certainly, like, arrogance is a real attribute, you know what I mean? So these things do exist, and the way to do it, the way to pull back, is to make sure, to use that doubt to check our motivations, to make sure we're working from our hearts. Are our motivations really rooted in the right place? Are they really centered where we'd like them to be centered? Okay, this voice of doubt. If we believe it, we will not develop our most heartfelt service for fear of arrogance, pridefulness, etc. We will not learn about it. We will not tap into it. We will not develop it. We will not offer the greatest gift that we have to offer. That's the core of what I'm teaching you about Lucifer today. The greatest gift that you can possibly offer the world, context, will vary, or scale will vary, but the greatest gift that you have to offer is symbolized by Lucifer. Symbolized by Lucifer in your chart. Putting the voice of doubt in its proper place opens the way for us to bring our light. Lucifer means bringer of light. So we all live the story, both men and women. Essentially, this is the story of exploring the right size, place, and use of the ego. It's the human condition, existential questions. Why am I here? What is this? What is happening here? Is there some big agenda? Is there a God? If there is a God, should I believe in that God? If I should believe in that God, should I treat it as friendly or hostile? These are the existential questions. Like, what's really happening here, and how do I fit into it? Learning to turn this voice of doubt into a check on your motivations leads you to be able to offer the service and also to really feel good about developing this part of yourself, which leads you to more wholeness, leads you to a greater sense of wholeness. The overview on the astrology nuts and bolts is, houses are the arenas of life. Houses are the divisions of the wheel, looking like the pie slices. Signs are ways of being or modes of being. And aspects are the relationships between planets and points in the chart and relative to Lucifer, how the voice of doubt is tied in with other parts. Yet also, what would need to work with Lucifer when the voice of doubt is turned around as a check on the motivations. So the aspects offer clues about what might need to be unraveled to be able to use Lucifer positively and healthfully. All right, that's a nuts and bolts introduction. I have these example charts. Enjoy the red paper, which was a weird result of my trip to this copy place today. Actually unexpected, if you can believe it.
I noticed that in certain periods of life or times that when people reach a certain age, these questions pop up more than others. Like
yeah.
Is that a result, do you think, of Lucifer's return? Or a time when that's heavily aspected with something that's happening astrologically, perhaps? There are times in your life when you think about that more than others.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Lucifer returns are...
I guess it'd be less than 12 years, right?
I think it's less than 4. Because this Mars business is just under 2, and then that's 12, and so this is about 4. Okay. And, so all 2 answers. First one, all returns deal with chapters in our lives about the energy in question.
Are you able to be past that?
Yes, please take one and pass it back.
Oh,
I was not clear.
So I have to choose between...
You can choose between red or white.
I think red is moving.
It may be. I don't know. I wouldn't know about these things. And if you could take one, please pass it back. So all the returns. So at a Lucifer return, you're dealing with chapters of Lucifer... stuff. Oh, I just learned this for 4 years and kind of cycling through chapters in the Lucifer experience. And the things affecting Lucifer is probably what is probably more relevant, because Lucifer return or chapters in that journey, Lucifer being aspected by other things, or even progressed Lucifer, if it happens to be moving quickly, can affect things. What I'm getting a sense of as I'm listening and thinking is that the response when transits come, they're outer events that ask us to change, to respond. So it seems to me like transits to Lucifer probably hold the most juice out of everything. Progressions would be internal change outward, but so I suspect transits to it are the major thing when you respond to an outer event. Does that answer? Is that cool?
Yeah.
So chart number 1, Lucifer. I also tried to arrow so you could just see it in case the LUCIF wasn't clear. Lucifer in Leo in the 3rd house. It's conjunct Saturn and the IC, the bottom of the heaven. It's square Neptune Uranus in.
I'm not seeing it at all.
Can you see where I arrowed, where I put an arrow in each chart?
Oh, yes, but I don't.
You can't see the symbols at all?
I see Saturn, and I see.
Mm-hmm.
I see something. I see Saturn right there.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Yep.
So what is that?
That's LUCIF.
Oh, that's what it said.
Yeah, and that's why I put the arrow there, so to draw your attention, so you could so you can see that. Because I know it might be hard to read because it's so small. But, you know, I'm saving trees. I love the planet. So, conjunct Saturn and IC, square Neptune, Venus, Venus, Uranus, trine Neptune, and then sextile ascendant and trine descendant. Start with the conjunction to Saturn and the conjunction to the bottom of the heaven. Whenever planets are conjunct, we're talking about fusing of energy. So here we have the voice of doubt, Lucifer, and Saturn, the authority and maturity function of this person. So what this person feels, what this person thinks maturity and responsibility are wrapped up with these Lucifer questions. Is there something bigger that I serve? You know, is there a God? Maybe not specifically that, but is there a greater purpose to this and should I serve it? In Leo, in the third house, we're talking about the mind, how the mind actually works, and we're talking about communication. And in Leo, we're talking about expression. Generally speaking, Saturn in Leo is going to, for a certain point in the life, at least up to the first Saturn return, try to put a limit on third house expression, Leo expression, because Saturn always tries to limit things. So third house is also inquisitiveness. So I would expect this to manifest in the person either as it's okay to ask as many questions as possible, or I really shouldn't be asking questions. I really shouldn't be doing what other people may perceive as testing the waters of what's really happening. So limit on curiosity, especially probably when the person was growing up, which is kind of like, here, this is what we're about, this is what we're doing. The more questions asked might have been uncomfortable. Lucifer in the third house. This is a conjunct to the bottom of the heaven indicates that the bottom of the heaven, this the beginning of the fourth house, is about home and family, and it's our private life. It's our inner world, our deepest sense of self, but our inner world, our private world. So at the same time, it's something on the IC is always opposing the midheaven, the most public place in the chart, which is called the MC. So this Lucifer energy, in this person's life, the voice of doubt about the what kind of place in the world is okay to develop, what kind of place in the world is okay to pursue. Then just kind of to run through some other aspects. Square Venus Uranus, it's just in Scorpio in the sixth. Oh, I'm sorry. So this Lucifer opposing the midheaven also opposes at the same time the Aquarius moon in the ninth house. So basic moon symbolism is what we have to do to make ourselves happy. So this is ninth house Aquarius near the midheaven. So there's a free thinking thing. There's a wanting of adventure. There's a wanting of freedom. Ninth house Aquarius and conjunct the midheaven. There's like this desire to be in the world, desire to develop a place in the world that is free and that offers open space, and that's opposing this Saturn Lucifer. So the Lucifer voice of doubt says, okay, Saturn Lucifer opposing this moon says, well, it's also the moon in the ninth house is also a measure of thinking big. And in Aquarius, we're talking about inventiveness and originality. So this opposition says that the Saturn-Lucifer thing, when the voice of doubt is in play, you can't really develop that thing that you're thinking about flying off to some weird country and doing something fabulous, and you can't really do that because nobody really does that. So this kind of limit on the idea of the adventure that the moon really wants. Because that moon wants adventure. That moon wants new stimulation, new people, new things, new information. This moon also loves technology, Aquarius in the ninth house. So the limits on that, the voice of doubt, say you can't really pursue all those wonderful adventures that you can imagine. The square, Venus, Uranus in the sixth. The sixth house is the house of duty and responsibility and how day-to-day tasks get done, the menial parts of life. And so there's this Saturn Lucifer at the bottom of the chart telling the original creative, inventive way of getting things done, you probably shouldn't do it that way. If it's negative, if it's the voice of doubt, it's saying, oh, yeah, your great solution, it's really not that great, don't even bother. Turning that around to a check on the motivations, and I might be skipping some other aspects, but I want to go here next. Turning it around from the voice of doubt to the check on the motivations, if this person is clear about why the mind works the way it does, why curiosity is an important thing, if it's clear about all of that, then this can be said, specifically like with the opposition to the moon, well, why do you want that? The question, saying, oh, you can't have that, or you shouldn't try to have that because nobody has stuff like that, is different than saying, well, why do you want that? Then you can have like a dialogue between it, especially since it's opposed. Dialogue of opposing viewpoints is really important with oppositions, instead of just feeling squashed by the other who's different. And then with the square to this Venus-Uranus, when it's the voice of doubt, it can say, oh, don't even bother trying to implement that because nobody really cares. That great solution that you came up with Venus, which is very creative, and Uranus, which is free thinking and original and inventive. So the square to that can be just making sure that the great idea is rooted like in the right reason, that the motivation is in the right place. Does this solution really get me where I want to go? So that voice of doubt can say, can keep that in check. Does the person whose chart this is want to make any comments about that, or ask any more specific questions? Cool. No worries. Okay. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. That's what I'm more interested in than if you have anything to say. for the purposes of the talk,
I don't have any questions. I'm not going to test the waters. I'm going to ask all my questions.
Oh, I want you to ask your questions. Isn't that an interesting way to look at that? Because I've looked at your chart a lot. I've worked with your chart a lot, but I've never really done that. Okay. The next page, chart number 4. Lucifer is in Virgo in the third house. And you'll notice the arrow in the lower left-hand part of the chart that goes right to the P. There's Lucifer's right there. It's conjunct Pluto and Uranus, sextile Jupiter, sextile Neptune, and then opposite Chiron. So Pluto, I said before, was the soul's wounding and also the soul's deepest intentions. And this subgeneration of people born between, I think, 62 and 68 who have Uranus and Pluto together have the deepest soul intention of making some kind of change for the better, trying to bring in revolutionary thought, trying to change up and upgrade how things actually work around them and in them. So, but the wounding of the soul is either that it never happened or they didn't do it well enough. So some Virgo stuff about taking responsibility. Virgo malfunctions are always about the feeling of not having taken responsibility enough. So when Lucifer is on there, the voice of doubt, so it's in Virgo. In the third house, we're talking again about the mind. We're talking again about the curiosity and how information comes in and out. So questions that get asked, locales that are explored, because it's also just kind of the environment just around you. The desire is to pick the right ones, right? The desire is to discriminate because of Virgo, to pick the right way of communicating. So the doubt is going to be, well, what? This is just kind of one layer of it, one manifestation of it. In this person's communication, it's really, really, really important because Pluto's in the third house. In some sense, to be heard, but also to think clearly. And with Lucifer on it, you're talking about the doubt that you're really thinking clearly, the doubt that you really have the right idea. That's going to carry over in day-to-day conversation because you're going to be thinking, wait a minute now, why did I think that? And it's kind of like a Virgo doubting thing. Maybe I'm not clear enough. Maybe I didn't ask enough questions before I did blank. Maybe I don't know enough about X before I do it. Like, and if the voice of doubt is really, really strong, that can be a pitfall because you never do anything because you're worried about making sure you knew enough before you did stuff. And the truth is that life does require some improvisation, which is not Virgo's strong suit. So it's actually anathema to Virgo. So that's the kind of setup on that. What is it? Let's do the opposition to Chiron. Again, Chiron and Pisces opposing Pluto. And this Chiron is in the ninth house. So we're talking about Chiron and Pisces in the ninth. And this has to do with basically a wounding to the imagination. Chiron and Pisces in the ninth house, the breadth of the imagination. And that is conjunct the Sun and Saturn in early Aries. So that wounding to the imagination is central to this person's makeup. And that is opposing the Pluto Lucifer. So ninth house, we're always trying to think big. Third house, we're always thinking small, but all around us. The doubt is in the day-to-day stuff. And there's a wounding to the big picture stuff, and these are opposed. So there's a back and forth about how, in one sense, it can be how much you can hope for the future, how much you can hope for, how much you can plan for the future, like what's worth planning for. And there's a kind of dialogue about doubt. When it's turned around and is a motivation or a check on the motivations with Pluto. Yeah, well, why do I really want to be clear in my thought? What is it that I'm trying to accomplish? Instead of saying, oh, you can't accomplish it, which is the Virgo negative of Lucifer, you say, oh, well, I'll answer that question and I'll figure it out. And that's how the voice of doubt can be turned around into helping you do your service. What your greatest service, this person's greatest service is in offering the new ideas that he or she has, in sharing those things, in what is learned about new things, new techniques, new ideas, alternative ideas. That's actually the greatest gift, and it's tied in with the Pluto, so it's the deepest desire is to offer the greatest gift. It's all wrapped up together. So in some sense, or in one sense, the stakes are a little higher for this person in getting Pluto and Lucifer work done because they're wrapped up together. Does the person this belong to want to make a comment or ask any questions? Because I've just done the general thing.
Yeah.
Right.
That's that thing, right?
Definitely. Yeah. Now, your soul's desire, Pluto, is about trying to be perfect. So obviously, you can see the pitfalls, because it's not real, it's not possible to be perfect, but you're always going to try to better it.
Yeah, I know it in my mind, mm-hmm. but it's always, I see something that somebody would tell me, oh, this is great, I'm thinking, yeah, I could have done better. You know? It's,
right.
It's that kind of thing.
Right. Right.
So it's basically, it's always a permanent struggle. Mm-hmm. So I know it in my mind, I can't be perfect. I would always try to do
right.
better. It's like, okay, this is not good enough. I want to do better.
Well, you know, one of the Virgo things is this analytical awareness. One of the remedies for the Virgo perfectionism is in learning to enjoy the process of whatever it is. So you do the thing, and then the next time you change the third part of it, that paying attention to what you're changing, that being in the moment and enjoying that process is part of the antidote. Antidote? Antidote, yeah. So that's part of the thing. So at the end you say, oh right, I could have done better. But when the trick, it's like a trick you can play on yourself, is to enjoy it while it's happening, so at the end, it's a little different energy. Okay.
I like doing that.
Yeah.
And even though I like it in the end, in some way, when I question, I think, okay,
Good.
That's
great.
That's never a problem.
Perfect.
That's never a problem.
Excellent. That's good to hear. Yes.
Another antidote is to do its opposite, Pisces.
Yeah, the acceptance and release. Yeah, and accepting that over the course of doing this, I don't know, some project, right? Let's say you were building model airplanes. And in the course of your life, you're going to build 70 or 80 of them, right? And you're like, oh, I could have done that better. You're on the 10th one. You're like, well, I should be really good at that. And that kind of release and acceptance is that big picture in that kind of situation, that big picture, well, look, this is a hobby I might do for the rest of my life. I do have time to get better. That kind of acceptance of,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes time,
yeah. Exactly. Pisces is that acceptance. The Virgo is the... I stayed up late to make sure I got it done. Or I stayed up late to make sure that I researched that thing about the new kind of glue that just got invented.
I got that too for a quick
second. Yeah.
I have to speak or something, so mm-hmm. I'm a person who researches absolutely everything.
Uh-huh. Right. Right.
Exactly like you said.
Exactly. And so as long as you enjoy the process, then you're fine. You know what I mean? Because the detail work to make sure that the end thing is perfect, that detail work... If we can't enjoy it, then, you know, then we're screwed.
What's it for?
Right, then you just stretch yourself out, because at the end, it's still not going to be perfect. So then you just stress that.
At least somebody will enjoy it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but thank you for that Pisces alternative, the acceptance and the releasing into the flow of how it's working. So let's move on to the next page. Chart number 6. This is a good one for this talk, for illustrating some of these principles. This idea of doubt. This is a client I did a reading for a few days ago who just RSVP'd for the chart recently. She's not here. She's not well. But I'm going to do it anyway because I thought it was... It really showed me something about the Lucifer thing. It's in Capricorn in the second house. Again, the lower left-hand part where the arrow is. And it's on the north node in Capricorn in the second house. And when something is on the north node in a chart, it was not accessible to us in past lives. In the karmic past, it was not available to us. And the north node represents, because we're coming from the south node, which is the opposite, and just mathematically, just geometrically, this is as far away as possible from that place we're coming from. So the north node for any of us, bless you, is a challenge for us to grow into new territory. South node is comfort zone, habits, old hat. We've done it, we've majored in it many times. North node is what's challenging for us. In this person's case, on the north node in the second, which is about, in Capricorn, which is about maturely developing a good self-esteem, is one way of looking at it, a very basic way. This person is now going to doubt, until she doesn't, that's possible. In the past, Cancer, 8th house, south node, was needed to be available to the emotional needs of others. All of the things that other people needed ruled her life. Very like service-oriented, but it could also be like a dominating other kind of thing. Because the 8th house does have to do with like Scorpio, Plutonian, powerful energy. And what she didn't get to do was develop her own sense of self-worth, which has to do with her value system. She didn't get to do it in a Capricorn way, which was maturely, slowly, intentionally, and with hard work. She was going left and right because of other people's emotional needs. And then Lucifer's on it, so she's going to doubt her self-worth, but her ability to grow as well, because that's what the North Node is. It's square Pluto, so again... Friction from the soul's desire and the wounding. And then a Libra in the 11th house, you know, one of the things about the 11th house that happens to us karmically that's negative is we get swept away by the power of groups. Soul's desire is Pluto in the 11th, which is to be with groups, to be with people. Other people who want the future to look like we want it to look like. And yet the wounding is in having been with them and probably having been trampled or something energetically. So that's squaring this Lucifer. So her wounding is going to drive her self-doubt, is going to increase her self-doubt until she really gets that her heart is in the right place and that her motivations are good. which is turning around that Lucifer idea. And then square Chiron, again, another T-square. Chiron and Aries in the fifth. It's a wound to the playfulness, and it's a wound to spontaneity and play. Aries, fifth house, and it's also square this. So, let's see. They're not, the Pluto and the Chiron are not in orb of each other, so it's not a T-square, I guess, after all. But, and also, because Chiron square the nodes, it's an unresolved issue for this person from past lives. So it's all tied up together in doubting the worth of the self. Chiron and Aries in the fifth. When I did her reading, I got to read about childhood wounding, specifically very very young childhood wounding, and so that's going to affect your self worth. And in the way these symbols are set up, that wounding is going to drive the doubt to get even stronger. Okay, so those are all the example charts. Are there any questions? We can take a few minutes about anything that I've covered or talked about. And if not, we'll wrap it up. Take a minute and.
So basically, the fear of a negative aspect of Lucifer is doubt.
Yeah.
And the way to turn it around is to use that to moderate, basically, or to use it as a. Not as a doubting mechanism, but more of a check.
A check. Yeah, why am I really doing this? Why am I doing this? What's my motivation? Why am I doing this? And I keep talking about the heart, if the reason is, oh, because that's what's truly important to me, then there's an answer, right? If the reason is, well, because I thought that might be a good idea, very different answer. So to check in means consulting more than one kind of voice, and if we're only doing Lucifer, we're just doing the brain. I think this is a good idea. I know this fact. I planned this contingency, you know. But they're like, what is really important to you? Where is your heart? What matters? Your brain is running logic scripts. Matters doesn't fit in your brain. So you have to allow that voice of, it could be desire, of like my heart's desire, this is what I want, but it's also just kind of like that resonant, all of you. What is with your whole happening with your whole being, or is this just what your brain can devise? You know? We can see this in so many people who get stuck in their brain, just get cycles in their brain, because the brain actually can help us out with figuring out how to get through difficult times. But it's also motivated by past pain sometimes, and so we're not dealing with the present, and so what we're really about isn't served. Yeah. Thank you.
I have two phones, and I didn't...
Who has two phones?
Two phones.
Yeah. Who has two phones?
Something for work. It's brand new.
Can you say
the
brain, when it says, I thought this was what I wanted, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I thought... That's when it's
mm-hmm.
I thought this was what I wanted. I thought this was good.
Yeah, if the answer to why am I doing this is a thought.
I thought this would.
Yeah, then obviously, I mean, this is such a truism, you know, it's your brain. And if the answer is, oh, well, I felt that, or, you know, and sometimes your brain will try that on and say, oh, well, I felt that that was a good idea, and it's like tricking you, don't listen to that, it's that feeling. Brain's pretty smart. Anything else? Okay, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.